a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
And welcome. So great to have you with us on this Saturday. Thanks for carving out a little bit of your day to join us here on Faith Radio. Coming up this hour, we're going to be talking about kids and puberty. Yes, it's a big issue for a lot of families right now. And if you've got a child at home who's about to enter that stage of life, you probably have a lot of questions being asked of you, and you're looking for answers. And we're going to be talking to a family physician who has answers and has written two books directly to kids about that change in life that we all go through. And he'll be joining us in just a few minutes. He's actually a good friend of mine and a former colleague from Focus on the Family. His name is Dr. Walt Larimore, and Walt will join us in just a bit. As you may know, every week when we kick off the show, I like to let you know about some of the family-related stories in the news, some of the new research that's out, some of the faith and culture-related items, and found something interesting about high school grade point average. A lot of graduations going on right now throughout our listening area. And here's a question. Do your high school grades count when it comes to your earning power as an adult? Well, it appears they do. High school grades really do matter. New study has come out, and it's found that higher grades in high school were correlated with higher earnings later as adults. In fact, that was true even for students who did not go on to attend college. Researcher Michael French and his team at the University of Miami found a high school grade point average was a strong predictor of future earnings. Dr. French says, conventional wisdom is that academic performance in high school is important for college admission, but this is the first study to clearly demonstrate the link between high school GPA and earnings many years later. Now, something else interesting the researchers found, good grades in high school are particularly important for African-American students. Compared to white students with the same high school GPA, black students went on to achieve more education than the white students did. According to the researchers, African-American kids with poor high school GPAs are less likely to graduate from high school and attend college, but those who have good grades are actually more likely than students of other races to graduate from college and continue on to graduate school. Dr. French says one possible explanation for this is that African Americans with relatively high GPAs are more motivated and determined than whites to attend college and obtain an advanced degree. So if you have a high schooler who says, well, I'm not planning to go to college, Mom, so A's aren't that important. Well, here is your answer. They are important. Even if your child decides to go into some kind of technical field that doesn't involve college, even if they go into something, you know, completely non-academic, that those high grades in high school will contribute to their earnings power later in life. Of course, it's not all about earnings and money and stuff. And as Christians, we know that character is far more important than any of that. But God doesn't want your child to fail, certainly, and he wants them to put as much effort into high school and academics as they can. So there you go. GPA really does matter. Well, there's another story out this week that I wanted to pass along to you, and this one actually really troubles me. There is a dangerous trend going around junior highs and high schools around the country called the eraser challenge, and it is causing big concern for parents and for physicians. Saw a story from WRIC in Richmond, Virginia, television station in Richmond. They ran a story on this game, and they quoted some physicians who said this challenge, this eraser challenge, could have serious negative effects on the kids who play it. Now, the game involves taking an eraser and rubbing it back and forth on your skin reciting the alphabet until you get to the end. The challenge is to see who can do it the longest. In other words, it's kind of a dare thing, and you can imagine how, after rubbing that eraser a few times, the pain from the friction, and these kids are trying to get to the end of the alphabet, and who can actually do it the longest. Stacy Thomas is a mom of a teen, and she was shocked when she found out that her son's scars on his arm were from an eraser. He came home with deep cuts on the back of his hand, and it took her a while to get him to admit what he had done. And it turned out that Stacy's son had been playing the eraser challenge with his buddies. Stacy says, "The thought never crossed my mind that you could inflict such harm with an eraser." And by the way, this is not just happening in Virginia. This is happening all across the country. It's these fads come and go, but this is one of the latest. Pediatrician David Arkin says, "You're going to often wind up with some disfigurement and some scarring. The scarring is going to be permanent." Dr. Arkin says, "This game is a lot more dangerous and harmful than teens realize." He says, "It can lead to a serious infection. And get this, bloodborne infections like HIV could potentially be spread by the eraser game." How scary is that? Dr. Arkin advises parents of teens and preteens to talk to their kids about the dangers of playing this game. By the way, I found a great article on teen fads, trends that are not good ones. There's, dangerous that could be put your kids at risk. And if you go to greatschools.org and you enter teen trends in the search box, you can read about some of those. Again, it's greatschools.org. That's the website that tends to rate schools across the country, but they also have great education articles and health articles. So look under teen trends at greatschools.org. You'll find out about some of these different trends that are going around right now. So anyway, make sure you talk to your kids about this, mom and dad. Have that discussion. And not just about this, about some of the other things. You may have heard me talk in the past about the choking game or the pass-out game. Just a real tragedy. Kids across the country dying from cutting off their own air supply temporarily to get high causes a buzz. And tragically, many kids are dying because of this. So I hate to talk about these negative things, but you know what? We need to know about it as moms and dads. And if you're an educator, if you're a youth pastor, you need to know about it as well and have those conversations with the kids that you love. Well, it's 11:13. I'm Bill Meyer, and this is the Faith Radio Network. Coming up next, my friend Dr. Walt Larimore talks about kids and puberty, how to talk to them about it, and what they should know. That's next on the Faith Radio Network.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
If you want to join the conversation, why don't you call us 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. In fact, if you give us your contact info, name, address, phone number, email, we'll have a drawing at the end of the hour for a copy of one of these books by my friend Dr. Walt Larimore. And if you have kids that are about to go through puberty, this would be just a wonderful, wonderful book for you, mom or dad, and to give to your child as well. So we're going to get into those books in just a second, but first let me tell you a little bit about Walt. He has been called one of the best-known family physicians in America. He's been listed in the Best Doctors in America, the Guide to America's Top Family Doctors, Who's Who in Medicine and Healthcare, and the International Health Professionals of the Year. He's also a best-selling author who has written, co-written, or edited 30 books. His writing has been recognized with a number of national awards, including a Christianity Today Book of the Year Award, a Retailer's Choice Award, 3 silver medallions, 3 gold medallions, nominations, and 3 Christie Award nominations. Just a prolific author on a variety of topics. He joins us today to talk about two of his books for kids and for their parents, The Ultimate Guy's Body Book and The Ultimate Girl's Body Book. And Walt, welcome to Faith Radio.
Hey, Bill, great to hear your voice and great to be with you again.
Now, writing a book for kids on puberty, what was the inspiration, Walt? What was it, your own kids going through that stage of life, or just questions you were getting from parents or kids themselves?
Well, Bill, as you and I have both learned, we certainly learn as our kids go through life, don't we?
You bet.
But this actually began early in my professional career as a family doctor. I was practicing in a little town in North Carolina called Bryson City, and one of the local fifth grade teachers called me and said, would you mind coming, you know, to school and talking to one day to the little boys about their changing bodies, and then the next day to the little girls about their changing bodies. And I said, well, sure, I'd love to do that. And I started doing that. That was in the early 1980s, and I've been doing it every year since. Well, these two books, Bill, are simply the questions that the kids are and have been asking through all of those years. And the inspiration was wanting to give parents a tool in which they could be their kid's answer person. They could be their kid's go-to person, that these questions that every kid has should first and foremost be addressed at home by mom and our dad.
Now, are you finding that most parents are reading these books with their kids, or do some parents simply say, here's your birthday present.
Here,
enjoy.
You know, I'm hearing both, Bill. Actually, in the foreword to each book, we have a note to parents and a note to the little boys in the boys' book or to the little girls in the girls' book. We actually encourage parents to do this with their kids a couple different ways. Parents have written to me and said, you know, this book was the core of a special weekend away or a special three-day vacation where I took my daughter or I took my son away, and we read this together, and we talked about it together. So that's one option. Another option are parents who will have a child read a chapter, and then they'll talk about it. They'll either read it together or read it apart and then talk about it together chapter by chapter. And then there's other parents who just say, give it to the child and say, read it, and then let's talk about it. But either way, no matter how you decide to approach it, even if you're not a parent, coaches have done this, Sunday school teachers, grandparents, aunts and uncles, YMCA leaders. So if you love kids, you can use this information. But the real key is to open kids up, to let them know that it's safe to talk about these things together. And even if I don't know the answer to every question you have, we can certainly find it together.
Now, I have to mention, both books have some great illustrations. The chapters are short and just packed with information. They're really kid-friendly. In fact, the Ultimate Guy's Body book, which the subtitle is Not So Stupid Questions About Your Body, has a great picture on the cover. It's these four kids of varying sizes. They're obviously going through puberty, maybe at different stages. And they're in, it looks like a gym shower, one of those big tile group showers with numerous shower heads, all with towels around their waist, with these giant eyeballs just looking at the, like, oh my gosh, what are we about to encounter? I love it.
Well, it's what kids feel too as they go through this crazy and confusing time of life, and it's a superb time for parents to provide anchors for their kids. Bill, I remember when Barb and I we're getting ready to go through puberty with Kate, and like most parents of teens and preteens, we really were scared to death of all the horror stories that we had heard about. But we decided to do two things. One was to pray consistently and daily for our kids and for ourselves as we were getting ready to enter those what we thought would be very turbulent times. And the second thing was to do everything we could to increase our time with our kids. For us, that meant, for me, it meant cutting back on work a little bit to spend more time with the kids. It meant increasing our amount of family meal times together. It meant decreasing screen time, internet time, and TV time. And what we learned in our family, and you and I have talked about this a number of times, is that quality time with kids comes only in the midst of quantity time, and it may be one of the most important and valuable gifts we give our kids. And my prayer is that these two books, these tools, can help parents begin to walk towards that goal with their kids.
You mentioned a couple of things that are really critical in today's world. You mentioned screen time, you mentioned family meals, and I know these aren't necessarily the topics you address in the book, but Let's just talk about those two things briefly, because the American Academy of Pediatrics has come out with some really solid advice on screen time, and then we've seen some fantastic research from Columbia University on family meals. If you would, just give us a little summary of what we know about those two things.
Yeah, I think it's shocking information to most parents that haven't been exposed to it, Bill. And both topics are covered in both the boys' book and the girls' book. But of all of the interventions that we have for our kids, apart from praying for them, connecting them with God, and connecting them with ourselves and with good friends, one of the most important may be the number of family meals we have per week. Bill, the research on this goes back as far as 45 years, and there's not one study published yet that does not show the more meals a family has together per week, the more protective that is for the child. If you look at scores on SAT tests, the more meals the family has together, the higher those kids do. If you look at report cards, school performance is improved by family meal time. We look at out-of-wedlock pregnancy or experimenting with drugs or alcoholism or getting trouble with the cops or with bad kids. All of those are reduced by family meals together. Even the epidemic of childhood obesity, overweight and obesity we're seeing in our country, is reduced by family meal time. And, Bill, the shocking thing is that the cutoff number appears to be about 5 meals per week. Mm. So out of the 7 times 3, 21 meals that a family could have together, even just 5 a week appears to improve a child's health physically, emotionally, relationally, and spiritually. So for a listener out there who's kind of counting up and saying, you know, we only maybe do 2 or 3, my recommendation, well, is increase that to 3 or 4. Just go up one, see how that goes, and then go up another one in another month or so. Is that the same thing that you're seeing in the literature when it comes to psychology?
Yeah, I am, Walt, and I saw something interesting from Columbia University. I think it was maybe 2 years ago. Their Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse, they do a lot of research on family meals, and they actually encourage family meals once a year. They kind of have a week where they say, hey, let's make this a priority. But about, I want to say maybe 2 or 3 years ago, they, and I don't know if they did the research or they simply reported on it, but what they found was, as they looked at mobile technology and its impact on the family, they found that that very important protective factor that you're talking about completely disappears if just one member of the family has tech at the table.
Yeah, in fact, the caveats are, number one, you cannot have tech at the table. Number two, you can't have any media on, not the TV, not the radio, not even music. It's got to be quiet family time together. And number three, it cannot be a time for parental scolding and criticism and critique, but it's a time for loving your kids, for opening up, for asking them questions about their day and their week, and then listening, really listening to what they think, what they believe, and what they have to say.
Hmm. We've got about 2 minutes before our break. Walt, tell us about what we're learning about screen time.
The less, the better. As you mentioned, the American Academy of Pediatrics has come out with a very strong statement saying that there's no healthy amount of screen time of any type for a kid under 2 years of age. And some of our listeners may say, well, what about some of those programs like Baby Einstein and Brainy Baby and all that? The research is showing that that not only doesn't help our kids, it actually may harm some of their verbal and social developments. After age 2, the less screen time, the better, but no more than 2 hours in any 24 hours. And, Bill, that's everything. That's TV, Internet, computer, smartphones. Number 3 is no electronics in bedrooms. No Internet, no smartphones, no TV, because the research is very clear. Even having a smartphone in or a cell phone in a child's bedroom overnight that only goes off once a month disrupts that child's sleep for the next 4 weeks. And so getting those electronics out, decreasing them, and in both books, we give kids and parents some tips on how they can begin the process of doing that, because the average child in America now is getting between 6 and 8 hours of screen time per day. Bill, that's almost like a full-time job.
It is shocking, Walt, and so few parents, I think, add up the hours. I saw a fascinating study on sleep texting just in the last year where the researchers actually found by looking at kids' text message records that they were getting these notifications in the middle of the night. They were not really waking up. They were sort of in a half-awake state, and they would respond to the text message, have no recollection whatsoever the next morning that anybody had sent them a text or that they'd sent one. Sometimes it was just gobbledygook, just garbled, you know, letters or words. And it's just like sleepwalking or sleep talking, but it's sleep texting.
And it reduces school performance. It reduces relationships by increasing tension, anger, irritability that kids have during the day. And it also disrupts the hormones that a child has that protect against obesity. So there's much harm from those little electronic tools. They can be wonderful for our kids. We just have to learn how to use them wisely.
Great advice. My guest, Dr. Walt Larimore. We are talking about his books, The Ultimate Guy's Body Book and The Ultimate Girl's Body Book. We're going to dive into some of the specifics about puberty coming up. If you know somebody who has a child who's in that stage of life or about to be, encourage them to tune in for the next 30 minutes or so as we dive into the subject of puberty here on the Faith Radio Network. By the way, if you're blushing, get over it. We'll be right back.
Real encouragement for an active walk of faith. Conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. It's so great to have you with us. Our website is myfaithradio.com if you want to find the entire broadcast schedule for the weekend and find out what programs are coming up today and tomorrow, or look at our weekday schedule. If you've never joined Faith Radio Monday through Friday, let me encourage you to tune in, because we have the finest Bible teachers in the world on Faith Radio, plus our great local live programming. My friend Neil Staben with his program Connecting Faith, Monday through Friday at 12 noon. We've got Susie Larson with Live the Promise. We've got Real Relationships, Everyday Relationships with Greg Smalley and Susie. At 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, just some fantastic programs. And if you haven't ever sampled those before, let me encourage you this week. You will grow in your Christian walk. You will learn something new. You will be challenged. I know I am on a regular basis. So please do make Faith Radio part of your week. Well, my guest this hour is Walt Larimore. He's a family physician. He has written numerous books. If you've never checked out his website before, drwalt.com, by the way, great job of scoring that URL several years ago there, Walt. That was pretty brilliant on your part. Drwalt.com, you can learn more about Walt's books, about his speaking, and he writes on a wide variety of topics. And these two books we're talking about today, The Ultimate Guy's Body Book and The Ultimate Girl's Body Book, they are designed for boys and girls who are about to or are currently going through puberty. And they're really designed for parents to go through with their kids, because I think a lot of parents are very uncomfortable discussing these topics. Walt, I don't know if there's any hard data on this, or if you just want to talk about your own personal experience or other physicians' experience in dealing with parents. But my guess is probably the majority of parents just are not so comfortable having these puberty discussions.
Oh, Bill, I think that's true. And the main reason, excuse me, that I hear is their parents didn't have it with them. And so in both books, my encouragement to parents is break the mold, break the cycle. And it's fine to be transparent with your kids, to say, as we did to Kate, our daughter, and Scott, our son, this didn't happen when we were kids, but we feel the Lord's leading us to have this time with you. And I want to confess to you, I'm just a little bit uncomfortable, in some ways a little bit embarrassed. But let's give it a shot and let's see how it goes. Bill, what we found, at least in our family, was the kids were far more comfortable than we were. And that goes along with the research that shows that irrespective of how they roll their eyes when we talk to them and how they appear not to be listening, teens tell us that the most influential person in their life is their mom and dad. Our opinions, our thoughts, our expectations can and will mold them for life. And so my prayer initially was that books, these two books, would allow parents to begin down that uncomfortable road, but with faith and with courage. And my prayer is that they'll experience the same fruit that we did in our family. Bill, let me just give you a real short story that illustrates this. When Kate was six, she's our oldest, Daddy called me up. He had been uncomfortable that I was spending so much time working in my profession, about 80 hours a week. And, Bill, I thought I was doing a good job. I thought I was being a good dad. I was supporting my family and taking care of them. But my dad wisely knew that you don't have very many years with your kids and you need to spend time with them. And he prayed about how he might communicate that to me. And the words that God gave him were this. He called me up on Kate's sixth birthday, and he said, "Walt, congratulations." And I said, "For what?" And he said, "1/3 of your life with her is over." Mm-hmm. And, Bill, it just struck me like lightning. For the people who will use these books, their kids are going to be in that 9, 10, 12, 13, 14 range. 2/3 of their life with their kids is over. But there's still that 1/3 left. And so I decided at that point to cut back on work, to begin to spend more time with the kids. In fact, I devoted every Tuesday when Kate got home from school, I was there at the school bus stop to meet her. I cut back on work. Tuesdays were hers. We walked together. We talked together. We did homeschooling together. We did homework. We had our weekly date on Tuesday. And Thursdays was Scott. Hey, Bill, when you and I were at Focus not too terribly long ago, remember they used to have those physician conferences. And so Kate was going to the Focus Institute as a college student, and the physician conference was there. And so she and I were attending that together, and we were walking to a room, and we were going to listen to Dick Swenson. Richard Swenson's a family physician, a well-known author of the book Margin. And it was a book that really changed my life in getting more margin time-wise and financially. But anyway, I was going to go listen to him. And ran into another physician who said, "Where are you going?" And I told him, he said, "Oh, listen, can you introduce Dr. Swenson?" Because the person that was going to introduce him isn't going to be there. I said, "Sure." So Kate and I walked in the room, said hi to Dick and Linda, his wife. And I was looking through his bio. And Bill, Kate said, "Daddy, can I introduce him?" And I said, "Well, sure, why?" She said, "Well, I just want to." I said, "Okay." So I introduced Kate, showed everybody where the bathrooms were. You know how we have to do that. And then Kate stood up and she said something like this, Bill, and I put it in the girls' book. But she said, "Ladies and gentlemen, my dad and mom have given me gifts throughout my life. They've given me gifts on my birthday and on Christmas and on Easter and on special holidays. And I want to tell you, I'm kind of embarrassed. I know they were good gifts, but I really don't remember very many of them. But when I was 6 years old, my daddy, after he got a call from his daddy, and after he read Dr. Swenson's book, Margin, my daddy was led of the Lord to give me the greatest gift that I've ever been given, other than my personal relationship with God. My daddy gave me the gift of himself, and he spent every Tuesday with me until I graduated from high school. I'll never forget that gift the rest of my life." She said, "So Dr. Swenson and his wife are going to teach you about parenting, and you should listen very, very carefully." Mm. Well, Bill, I had tears going down my cheek, and so did Dr. Swenson down his. And so my prayer is that these books can motivate parents to do what we know we should do by giving us a tool in how to do exactly that.
Mm. Beautiful, Walt. Let's dive into some of the content here. And again, these are very comprehensive books that really answer most of the questions, the major questions that would come up that boys and girls would ask both before they go through puberty and during that time. What's the best time for a parent to start these discussions?
It's very variable, Bill. As you know much better than I do, children develop at extremely different rates. I was doing an interview with a large radio station in Chicago, and about 2 weeks later, the producer of that show called me, and she said, Walt, my six-year-old came home asking questions that totally astounded me. And what was most shocking to me was my six-year-old daughter said, Mommy, you know, my friends and I are talking about sex, six-year-old, and how we need to save that for marriage. But wouldn't it be something we should experiment with so that we can be good at it? It's like basketball. You don't go and play college basketball without having ever played it before. And so maybe we should have sex before we get married. Why not? And then her producer mom, her jaw hit the floor. I mean, it's a six-year-old. And she remembered that that was one of the questions in the girl's book. And she said, it's time. Now, our neighbors who homeschool their kids, their boys who were involved in the team that actually – I had expert teams and parent-child teams that helped me with both books. But for those boys, it was a little bit later in their life. And so I think each parent needs to kind of take a look at the book, take a look at the questions, decide when it's right for their child. But those questions are structured, Bill, so that early on – kind of the easiest questions about sweating and BO and growth and growth curves and acne and pimples and when do I shave and that sort of thing. Those are kind of the early questions. They're a little bit easier to get into. And then some of the more difficult questions are put towards the end of each book.
Now, I recall Dr. Dobson saying several years ago, when he was talking specifically about sexuality and puberty too, but he was saying that if you do it too early, the kids are kind of going to give you a blank stare. Or they have no idea what you're talking about, and they're kind of like not interested. But if you wait till it's too late and the kids are already have entered puberty, they may be ashamed or embarrassed to have mom or dad discuss these topics. So there's kind of that window of opportunity. Is there anything that you would say to parents that can help them discover what that window is? Obviously, that six-year-old, that's pretty shocking, and that's probably, unfortunately, more and more common in this day, given the fact that kids are exposed to this information earlier and earlier. But are there some maybe things that moms and dads can listen for or observe in their kids that say, okay, it's time to start having these talks?
Bill, you've hit the nail on the head, as you always do. That key word is listen. Taking the time, whether it's family meals or walks with your kids or dates with your kids, to listen for when they begin asking questions. Now, that listening has to be coupled with the trust. In other words, the kid knows that whatever they say, they're not going to get jumped on, screamed at, yelled at, critiqued, criticized, but that their mom and dad's going to kind of really listen to them. And they'll begin to ask some of these questions where you'll know, okay, it's time to get into that. Other parents who are going through these books with their kids will notice that as they get further in the questions, if it's a little bit too early for the child, they'll begin to lose interest. And at that point, at least what we suggest in the book, in our note to parents, is that's the time just to back off and say, hey, why don't we put this down and do something else for a while? We can come back to this next month or even next year. But you've opened that door of listening and discussion that lets your kid know, hey, it's safe to talk to mom and dad, not just about these questions, but about anything.
Boy, some very key parenting advice there, Walt, and I'm hoping that parents of kids of any age are listening to that. One of the first questions that comes up for both boys and girls is, what's happening to my body? What's going on? And what's the best way for a parent to – what I've said to my kids – and my son's 11, so he's not quite there yet. My oldest daughter is 9, but we're on the cusp of that. And one of the things we've already started talking about are, here are some of the things that are coming up down the road. And they've actually been quite interested in that. We've talked about it pretty matter-of-factly. It hasn't weirded them out. They haven't been uncomfortable with it. And my daughter's asked a few questions that are actually, for a 9-year-old, pretty savvy questions. But what's one of the first things you say to your child about, okay, here's what's coming down the pike?
Well, that's what the book's designed to do. In other words, it starts with the questions that they, if they're not thinking now, they're going to be thinking very soon. And your experience is very similar to what I hear from other parents, is that as you start going through these questions, kids go, yeah, that is a good question. You know, that is a good question. But it's important for parents to know that puberty, especially in girls, is occurring much earlier than it did in our generation. There's a variety of debates about why that is, but the why isn't nearly as important as the fact that our kids are going to go through it a little bit earlier. I remember my dad taking me away for a weekend when I was in seventh grade to talk about sex and sexuality. Bill, I was probably a little too young for it. It ended up being a scary time for me to hear that. I actually had nightmares about it. Now, for Scott, my son, seventh grade was a little bit late. We actually started a little bit earlier with him. So knowing that puberty is coming earlier, but our kids are exposed to so much information. In general, what parents tell me is that the kids are already asking these questions. They just didn't know it was safe to ask mom and dad.
And that's, safety is one of the probably most important keys, is the child has to know that whatever, and you, I think you can even say this, whether it's about sexuality or drugs and alcohol, any topic that might be a little bit risky or dangerous for the child, to be able to say to your child, you know what, you can talk to me about anything at all, and I'm going to listen. And now, if you tell me that you're involved in something that's, you know, maybe dangerous, there might be some consequences for that. But I want you to know the door is always open, and if you ever have questions, there's no dumb questions. There's nothing that will, you know, shock me. Because you're going to be hearing stuff. And I even said we've said to the two older kids, and even to our 7-year-old, you're going to be hearing stuff from other kids. And you're going to be, we don't let them watch television. That's just a choice we've made as a family. We watch videos, and there's a certain amount of, well, every once in a while we'll let them watch something like a sports event on TV. But we don't watch sitcoms. We don't watch television dramas for sure. My daughter does like HGTV, but that
she's gonna
be a designer one of these days. But even that show, Walt, guess what? They feature gay couples on that show. Now, they don't actually spell it out, but they talk about partner. And my daughter one day was watching HGTV, and she said, "Dad, there are these two guys, and they were buying a house together." And she said, "They must be really good friends." And then she said, "And they're adopting a baby together." And I said, "Hun, let's talk about that for a minute." And so that opened the door to talk about homosexuality and gay marriage. And boy, she was very attentive, really listened to it at 9 years of age. Our 7-year-old came home and said that one of the little girls had told her that that another girl has two mommies, and she didn't understand that. So yeah, it's younger and younger ages, and we have to help our kids understand that, it's again, there's nothing off limits. Again, if they tell us something they're involved in or that somebody else is involved in that's dangerous, like we talked about the choking game at the earlier uh-huh. in this program, if our kid says, "Yeah, my friends and I are getting together and playing the choking game," and yeah, there's going to be consequences for that, and I'm going to be calling up every parent of those other kids and letting them know about this very dangerous game that some junior high kids play. But I think establishing that safety is key. Now, Walt, I want to mention we do have 3 copies of each of these books to give away. And we're going to encourage, if you'd like one of these, if you're a mom or dad with a child about to go through puberty or going through puberty now, or maybe you're in youth ministry and these would be helpful to you, if you give us a call right now at 877-93-FAITH, give us your contact info, we'll put you into a drawing for one of these copies. Tell Kim, our producer, if you'd like a copy of the girls' book or the boys' book. And at the end of the hour, we'll have a drawing for those 6 books. This is the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Walt Larimore. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more on the ultimate guy's body book and the ultimate girl's body book here on the Faith Radio Network.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. My guest is Dr. Walt Larimore. He's a prolific author, and he has a wonderful website, drwalt.com, where you can learn more about him. He also speaks, and he'd love to speak in your area if he can fit that into his schedule, if you'd like to have him come and talk on one of a variety of health-related topics. We're discussing his books, The Ultimate Girl's Body Book, The Ultimate Guy's Body Book. I'm just going to run through, you don't have to answer these questions right now, Walt, but I'll just give parents and our listeners a feel for some of the questions that kids might ask and how the book answers them. Let's look at the boy's book for a second. For example, I don't like things about my body. Will they get better? Why is my body changing? Why isn't it changing like I expected? Why are my feet so big? I've got body odor. What's a guy to do? What's a growth spurt? I keep eating. Why am I still so little? And then some of the girls' questions. How about this one? And then some of those similar questions to start off with, like what's happening to my body? I'm changing. But then what is a period? Some of my friends are having periods. Others aren't. What's up with that? All right, let's tackle that one, because for moms and dads who are listening right now, that is probably one of the most traumatic things that can happen to a girl if she hasn't been prepared. And my guess is, and I don't know if there's hard research on this, if she is prepared and knows that that's going to occur, it's a lot less scary. Not that it's still not going to be uncomfortable for her, but it's something that she goes, oh, okay, they told me this was going to happen, right?
You're absolutely right, Bill. Preparation is really key to help reduce that initial shock and surprise and trauma. I mean, we all can imagine, or you've seen shows or movies, you know, someone gets shot, you know, and then they start bleeding and they look at the blood and they're in shock. Well, that's what blood does. And so to reduce that shock, the preparation can be key. For the girl's book, I co-wrote it with a dear friend, a family physician named Mari Woleaver, and Mari tells a story of, she came from a Hispanic background, grew up in Puerto Rico, and in that environment, when they have their first periods, of course, their parents, their moms, and aunties have prepared them for it. But when you have that first period, it's a great celebration. And I thought, wow, what a wonderful idea. I kind of wish we'd have thought about that with Kate, of having some family and friends to celebrate this transition into womanhood. And so we spend a chapter talking to moms and little girls about how this can be a big day, a wonderful day, a sign from the Lord of something that He created. It's divinely designed. It's not a surprise. God's not on Prozac when a little girl has her first period. But this is a step into womanhood and new responsibilities, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but in the eyes of the family and in the eyes of the community. And so, I mean, it's easy for a psychologist, for a physician, to answer these questions clinically, but we wanted to do it through the prism, if you would, of the Bible and a Christian worldview. Why did God design these things, and how do they fit in His plan of calling little boys and little girls into an exceptional life of getting to know Him and getting to make Him known, of learning how to allow Him to bear fruit in them and through them, and to unlock their passions and what they were created for. And, Bill, we make a point that I think most parents overlook, and that is that God considers little boys men much younger than society does, and God considers little girls women much younger than society. In fact, in the case of boys, almost all of the disciples, if not all of them, other than Peter, were either young teens or mid-age teens when Jesus chose them. When Jesus began the Christian church, it was a youth movement because He chose little boys to be His first church, the leaders of His first church. And think of the examples through Scripture of young women, whether it's from Esther all the way up to the example of a young teen girl named Mary, who He asked to carry His son, actually asked her for permission, to which she said yes. And so, yes, there's the questions of emotional and physical development that are important, but we wanted to couch them in that spiritual prism in such a way that the Christian Medical Association has endorsed both books as being medically reliable and biblically sound, and we wanted parents to be able to trust them as exactly that.
Mm. And that's so critical, because if we want our kids to thrive as human beings, and certainly thrive as believers in Jesus Christ and have an effective life, be able to serve God, follow his precepts, that preparation, that discipleship on a wide variety of issues. And, you know, I think there are some parents, Christian parents, well-meaning Christian parents, that think it's all about, you know, Bible memorization and having a family devotion. Those things are key. But we're talking about other areas, and this is one. Puberty, going through that change in life, being a good steward of your body, realizing how God has designed you to best function, and realizing that when you go outside of that design, I often talk about God being the great architect of creation, and he's like that architect at his drafting table making this, you know, beautiful skyscraper or cathedral, and he has designed us and knows how we are to best function. When we go outside of that design, tragically often we experience pain and suffering in our lives, and so many young people are, unfortunately, because of what the culture is telling them, because of what media is telling them, they're experiencing this sort of suffering, and it breaks my heart. I know it breaks your heart as a family physician. Walt, we're just about out of time for this hour, and man, I feel like we've just scratched the surface on these two books. I do want to commend them to parents, to pastors, to youth leaders, educators, and you know, if this is something that maybe your kids are grown, you probably got grandkids that are coming that way. So pass these books along to your adult children as they raise your grandchildren. Again, these books are called The Ultimate Girl's Body Book and The Ultimate Guy's Body Book. They're available from Zonder Kids. You can learn more about these and the other books that Walt has written at his website, drwalt.com. And Walt, are you going to be speaking in the Upper Midwest anytime in the near future? I should have asked you that before the program.
You know, there's a new course bill that I have for healthcare professionals on how to bring their faith to work called Grace Prescriptions, and I'll be teaching that course in the Chicago area. The site isn't set yet, but the Chicago area on September 13th and 14th, and so information on that will be available at drwalt.com, drwalt.com.
All right, check out Walt's website today. A lot of great articles and, again, some fantastic books on a wide variety of subjects. Walt, thanks so much for carving out an hour of your Saturday to spend with us today. We appreciate you, and may God continue to guide and direct you in your work and your ministry.
Thanks, Bill.
Dr. Walt Larimore, our guest here on the Faith Radio Network, we thank you for joining us today. I'll be back next Saturday at 11 a.m. Central Time, or if you're listening to our rebroadcast on Sunday, thanks for joining us. And if you want the entire broadcast schedule for Faith Radio, go to myfaithradio.com.